Good morning, Redemption Church, and can I tell you for the record that you guys are rad, man. You are a rad church, and here's why. So last week we had Bridge Receiving come and hang out with us, not a dry eye in the house. We were all just teary and moved by that whole thing, but it was more than just our emotions were moved. You actually went out and talked to Tracy afterward, and then I sent her an email later that day or maybe the next morning, said, hey, how did it go? She goes, you won't believe it. Your people gave an additional $9,000 last Sunday as people were just going to the table. So thank you. That is... And that was just then. I mean, there could be other people that are signing up for monthly support or whatever else, but it just, I mean, she was like, man, I've been crying. I talked to her later in the week. She's like, I've been crying all week. It's like, just, it was so moving for her. In fact, one of our people, my friend David, he was actually at home with his wife. They're watching it online. And when that whole thing happened, they were so moved, he jumped in his car, drove down here just so he could connect with her to make sure he could find a way to support her financially and what they're doing out there at Bridge Receiving. So all the way around, just a really cool Sunday morning, and I was just so moved that you all were moved to do that. So with that, there's another thing too. So we did this about 5 years ago. It freaked me out. It was this long. But 5 years ago, we literally shut down on a Sunday morning, and we all went up to Bridge Receiving, and we did a day of service there at the facility. In particular, we laid a bunch of bark on about a half-mile trail that goes from the house to the camp. And when I was watching the video last Sunday, I'm like, oh, that trail's looking sad. We should probably go back and do that. And so July 7th, this July, we're going to close down Sunday morning. We're not going to do church as a group of people here. We're all going to go do church up there at Bridge Receiving by serving them and doing the trail again and doing some other projects as well. And so it's going to be really cool. So we'll be pushing that more as it gets closer, but we just want you to know, hey, for the good of the city has all kinds of things involved in it, and these are ways that we try to serve that particular ministry. So it's going to be fun to go up there in July and just be a part of that and kind of invest that way, show them our love for them and all that they're doing. So very cool. And all of that then comes back to really even what the theme of the day is about. It's all about church, all right? Now, when Redemption got started up nearly 13 years ago, which even for a moment, can I just say that's super odd to me to think that there are people, if you've been with us since the beginning, and maybe you had a child in those first few years, your child has never known like what it's like to have their own space, their own building, like a Sunday school class that isn't also a science lab. Like they just, they're yet to experience that, but that's coming. But when we started 13 years ago and kicked up dust, man, there was a handful of like mottos that we had to kind of kick things off. So one of the big ones was, it's all about Jesus. That was like day one, week one, plastered on the screen. It's all about Jesus. And basically we borrowed that from Mars Hill Church because Mars Hill was cool at the time, right? And we're like, hey, that's right, we want to all be about Jesus. And so that was an early motto of ours, but it really did galvanize us. One of the other mottos is what I talked about last week, for the good of the city. And we did that because the city welcomed us in, and therefore we wanted to invest into the city that cared for us. But another one I mentioned last week was this idea of a church without walls. And that was important because we had walls, and then we lost walls, and now we didn't have any walls. And I honestly thought we would never have walls. I really did. Not because I was like, I don't like walls. I'm anti-wall. It wasn't that. It just, honestly, when we started doing the calculations and seeing the cost and everything else, we're like, we will never have walls in Duval. Impossible. Too expensive. Nuts, no way, we're just going to get used to being constantly nomadic for the rest of our existence as a community of faith. That's what I really thought. But then yesterday, I was down on 203, and I was taking a picture of our building. Yes, it's very cool. We're going to have walls, but not the first week of June. All right, so here's the thing, all right, because that was the last target we gave you. We are a week away from that deadline. Unless you like it airy, we're not ready, all right? So we're not ready yet. And so there's been a couple of things that have delayed it, so it's not going to be the first weekend of June or the second or the third or the fourth. It's probably going to be somewhere in July, which it's better than nothing, right? Because you've not had walls for a long time. You can wait another 6 to 8 weeks for some walls. It's okay, right? And it's okay in my mind too. Now, it's kind of funny, this whole project and process and everything else, because again, we're all so eager to get in and everything else and see it happen. But at the same time, I'm just every day, I'm like, God, you've done what I thought was impossible. I really did not think that this was ever gonna come about. I didn't think this would be something that we would ever see. And yet by his grace and by your generosity, it's underway, right? We are going to have walls. But in this, I want to remind us of something which is connected to the theme of the day, which is if you listen closely to the leadership, and if we're really on point, sometimes we make this mistake because it's a normal human mistake, but if you listen, we try to always call this facility the hub. We try to avoid calling the building the church. We call it the hub, or we call it a toolbox, and it's going to be the raddest, coolest toolbox that there is, but we're always wanting to make sure that we keep it clear, that is a building, you all are the church. The people make the church the church. The building doesn't make the church the church. When the building is empty, it's just that, it's an empty building. The church is where you are at, where I am at, where we are at. That's what makes the church the church. And so what we realize about this is that what Jesus is building, what Jesus has established, what Jesus invests into is this community of faith that is bound in commitment to and faith in him. It is this desire, this passion, this quest to incarnate him or embody him in our world. He is the head, we are the body, all of Christ, and therefore we're trying to figure out and live out, how do I authentically capture the spirit, the essence, the heart, the mind, the feelings, the mission of Jesus as an individual, and then we collectively bring that together as a community of faith, as a church. See, that's kind of what we're talking about today, because it's one of our values. So we've been walking through all the different values. We seek to be like Jesus. We err on the side of grace. We take the Bible seriously. We encourage everybody sweeps. We do things for the good of the city. And then today, we believe life is best lived with others. With others. Which means part of this whole quest is not simply that on Sunday we go to church, but rather it means we have this process of thinking, of acting that says, no, when we come together, we want to be the church. We want to belong to a community that is dependent on and depending on one another. That is the heart of Jesus for what this whole enterprise is all about. And so that's exactly what we're going to unpack today. And so I'm going to go ahead and open with a word of prayer, and then we'll just jump right in and go to a couple of different places that I think are valuable for us to realize as we look at this particular theme of the day. So let's go ahead and pray together. Jesus, I thank you that when you came, you had a clear objective, and that is to take the vagabonds and the ragamuffins and the outsiders and this whole eclectic group of people, right? People that were of the nation of Israel, people that were opposed to the nation of Israel, people that were slaves, people that were free, men, women, you name it, and you wanted to bring them together. In the common bond of your spirit, you wanted to bring them together with a common mission of your good news. You wanted to bring them together with a common disposition, which is to live the fruit of the spirit in authentic community that surrounds you. And so I really do ask that today you will work in our hearts and our souls to really own what that looks like in all of its complexity, in all of its discomfort at times, that we will realize that the way the world's most gonna know that you are legit and real and that this message changes lives is that we are a community of changed people who model those things. And so really just teach us and guide us and show us and inspire us today. May we long for what it is you long for. May we seek what it is you are seeking to do. And so we love you, Jesus, and we certainly ask you to teach and guide us this day in an authentic way so that we, again, are just, man, that kind of community that the outside community looks at and says, yeah, that's the thing. That's what we're missing. Help us to be that in your good name, Jesus. Amen. So when Jesus came into the world, he had a number of different points of agenda. Like if you just read through the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you will see that. Like in John 6, he's really clear. He's like, I came to do the will of my Father who sent me. So I want to do whatever it is he wants me to do. Or you look at Mark chapter 10. He's like, I came not to be served, but to serve and to give my life as a ransom for many. I want to make the payment for your enslavement to sin, and so I'm going to give myself as that ransom. That's his mission. From that, he says in John 10:10, I want you to know then what true life is all about, abundant life. The enemy wants to rob you of life. I want to give you true, authentic life, and not just life here, but life eternal. John 17, he says, this is eternal life, that you may know him, the only true God. So relationship starts here and now and just has this trajectory of forever with God. But then even in John 14, he says, and I want you to know this too. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. So Jesus models to us who God is, so we might know God, so we might live like God, so we might have life with God, so we might be renewed to God. All of these are the mission statements of Jesus. And he has others, though. And he had other agendas that are kind of woven into that. And it's not just about how I can be ransomed and I can know God and I can have abundant life and I can have eternal life, but it's also how we then collectively come together as a group of individuals, people all touched by those mission statements to fulfill another common unified mission statement. And so if you're taking notes with us this morning in our app, it's gonna be the first point in our notes for the day. And I wanna make this point really, really clear. It's the first thing here. Jesus came to start a community of faith, not simply a religion. Right? When we talk about why he came into the world, I want this to be that thing that we look at and we really let resonate with us. That when Jesus came, he's like, man, I don't want to just start another system. I don't want to just start another dogma. I don't want to just start another thing among things. No, I want it to be a unique thing, a special thing where heaven touches earth, where people are so oriented on a different plane than the plane of the world that it is a community that's designed to transform and shape all communities. See, to me, this is important because this goes back to what God's telling Abraham. Man, I want to touch all the nations through you. Or Psalm 22, I want to touch every family through this person that's going to come into the world that is the Messiah, the Savior of all. Like, that's what he's wanting to do, and we get to be a part of that. See, for me, then, it's more than just a religion. And we are more than just practitioners of a religion. We're something more deep and intimate and personal. We're community. Now, I know for some people this is a little strange. You're like, but wait a minute, isn't Christianity a religion? I go, well, yeah, technically I guess it is. Well, didn't Jesus start Christianity? And I go, well, that's not how he put it. See, Jesus put it in different ways. I would say the way he put it is he came to start a movement. A movement. Right? How does he articulate it? He's like, really, this is about the kingdom of the heavens coming and changing the kingdoms of the earth. And so this idea of the kingdom is this reorientation upside down and backwards, doing life different than the way life is done. And so from these, like, man, I came to bring a movement of people. In this sense of movement, there is a following, which is why he would repeatedly say, follow me, follow me, follow me. Like, do as I do, think as I think, have my rhythms as you do life. In fact, if anything, he was offering a different way, which is why the early followers of Jesus, you know what they first called themselves? Those of the way, right? He was giving them a different way of conducting life. And so what you had in those early followers of Jesus, bound by a movement, following the way, was people who were radically forgiven, radically transformed, and then from that, radically deployed. Right? Radically so. I'm going to probably use that word a lot today because I wanted to kind of get into our thinking. Because what Jesus wanted to really do with his followers that came together as a community of faith is he wanted people to look at them and say, I don't know what that is, but that's different. I don't know what that is, but they're doing life at a whole different level. I don't know what that is, but no matter what's happening in their life, they have love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and gentleness and long-suffering and self-control. That stuff doesn't just happen because you dig deep. That only happens when the life of God is thrust into the souls of people and he presses out in them those traits. See, that's what Jesus seeks to do in this community of faith called the church. Like Jesus steps in and says, okay, you guys got a problem of sin. You got a problem of brokenness with God. You got a problem of selfishness in yourselves. And I'm going to address all of that. And then I'm going to remake you and redeploy you for a whole new thing. And that thing is what's sitting right here in this room right now. And what's watching online right now, or in the next week or 2 weeks. And you ready? It's also happening just right down the road at Adventure Church. And just a little further down at Timberlake. And over here at Stillwater with Nate and Maggie, it's happening there too. And everybody that's there, and it's happening at Valley Foursquare. And I'm one of those weird ones that actually thinks, and this is just not, I know it's not everybody, but it's me. I actually think even, you know, like Holy Innocence. Right? It's happening there too. And it's happening in hundreds of locations all around Seattle, thousands of locations all around the world. Like Jesus is like, man, I got a big community of faith that I've deployed to do radical things and to be a radically different kind of people who do amazing things in my name. See, part of Jesus' mission wasn't just, again, to save me and to save you, but to bring us together to be a community that is designed to then reach the world. Right? Jesus said that he wanted to build this thing called the church, or the assembled ones. That's really a good rendering. Like the Avengers, the assembled ones, right? Like, that's what we are, assembled by him. And he declares this is a part of his agenda in Matthew chapter 16, right? So there's this scene. Jesus has been just like doing tons of stuff, speaking, healing, teaching, casting out demons, feeding, all these different things, right? And so there's a lot of talk. And so Jesus pulls in the fellas and he's like, hey, what's the scuttlebutt? You're listening to people. They're saying stuff about me. Spill the tea, man. What is it? What are they saying about me? And they go, well, some think you're a prophet and others think you're Elijah back from the dead or something like that. They got different opinions. And he goes, okay. But they've only had a certain proximity. You've been walking with me. You've been listening to me. We've been sitting around the fire talking for months and months and months. So who do you say that I am? And then Peter steps up and he says, you are the Christ. You are the Christ, the Son of the living God, right? Just drops the bomb. You're the one we've been waiting for. You're the one the world needs the most. You're the guy. Now, what I think is funny about this is when Peter says this, he's got the right name, the right label, the right title, the wrong definition behind it. Right? He's thinking of this conqueror who's going to crack skulls, take names, wipe out Rome. He's still thinking in that framework. So you're the Christ who's come to kill all our enemies. That's in his mind, which is why in about seven verses, he gets scolded and called Satan. All right. So like he gets an A+, and then like seven verses later, gets an F-. That's just what happens with him. All right. But he's still on point. This is who Jesus is. And so before Jesus scolds him, he actually gives him a sense of his station in this whole plan that's unfolding about this thing that Jesus is doing. And we're a part of this too. So Peter says, you're Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus says, well, you didn't come up with that. My Father gave it to you, but nonetheless, now I say to you that you are Peter, which means rock. And upon this rock, I will build my church, and all the powers of hell will not conquer it. See, that's so good because, again, this is a part of the mission statement. I'm building a thing, he says. And what I love here is he says, hey, Peter, I'm going to use you to build this thing. What I love about that personally is that Peter was a messy dude. Peter was an imperfect guy. If you fast forward about 17 to 18 years later, he's still a messy guy. He doesn't nail it all the time. He's not perfect. He gets afraid of his own. He starts to placate and try to appease and whatever. He has his own issues. But Jesus is like, I'm still going to use you to do this thing. And it's not just you, but I'm going to pull together this vast assembly, this community of people who are going to live for and live by my teaching. And it's going to be so profound that when they own it, when they really get it, when they just buy into the values of the kingdom, he's like, man, then Satan, sin, death, hell itself can't contend. Can't contend, can't hold it back, can't throw it down, can't stop it in any way. And the thing I really thought about this week as I was thinking about this is that where the values of Jesus, where they reign, then all of the baggage of hell cannot be sustained. It just can't. It's just like, matter of fact, the image here, I think we go like, so the church is there and it's got a gate around it and hell can't knock down the gates. Not what it says. No, what it's saying is hell has its place, it has a gate around it, and it can't sustain the onslaught of the church knocking its gates in. We're not defensive, man. Right? We're offensive. We're proactive. Right? We're not reactive in this whole thing. That's what Jesus is trying to get across. And the thing I think about with this, and you know me, this is my commitment. I've decided this is my quadrilateral for life. When we own the Sermon on the Mount, Sermon on the Plain, Fruit of the Spirit, definition of love, those four things in Scripture, if you really own, that's kingdom stuff. That's Spirit-driven kingdom stuff. That's otherworldly kind of behavior. When we own that, man, those gates come down. They just come down, right? And nothing can withstand that very thing. Because when we're really living that as a community of faith, man, that's what drives out selfishness, drives out sinfulness, drives out arrogance, unforgiveness, religiosity, I mean, you name it, gracelessness, like all the things that can come with the baggage of religion can get driven out when we lean into the Jesus stuff. When we, again, kind of embody his message for daily living. And so when I think about then the church, I go, man, in one sense, the church is for you. The church is for me. But it's not simply for me or simply for you, but it's us working collectively together where we realize it needs me, I need it, we all do this together, and from that Jesus is seen. Jesus is felt. Jesus is known in our world. But it has to be that we own that it's a collective process. In fact, if anything, I'd even say it is impossible for me to grow without being intermixed with all of you. Like, it's impossible. And that's true for every one of us. There is no growth apart from the collective whole. Therefore, number two in your notes, true spiritual growth can only happen in intentional community. It can only happen in intentional community. So I go to Paul in Ephesians chapter 4, and this is what he says. He says, listen, there's one body and one spirit, just as you've been called into one glorious hope for the future. So the one body is, again, the church. It's a metaphor for the church. And he says, okay, there's one, even though it's Adventure and Stillwater and Timberlake and you name all, it's still one collectively in the eyes of God. So that's true, but we're just kind of broken into little pockets and parts. But then he goes further. There's one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all, in all, and living through all, right? So it's very, very big and collective. It says, however, he has given each one of us a special gift through the generosity of Christ. So this big old thing made of a bunch of somebodies gets distilled down to every one of those somebodies has some skill, has some ability, has some special talent, has this thing that he's given to each one of us for the purpose of the collective good, right? So it doesn't matter who you are, how long or not long you've known Jesus, how mature or immature you are in the faith, there is something that Jesus, in his loving kindness and craftsmanship, said, I'm just going to put that in you. And for you, boop, that's yours. And boop, that's yours. Yet, it's not meant to be just for me. Like, I'm not allowed to take my gift of teaching and be like, I'm just going to stay home by myself all the time and study. And I will never teach a soul. I'm just going to do it for my own edification. Like, that would be wrong, right? That wouldn't be why he gave me this thing. Sure, I can be edified by it, but I'm meant to give it, to share it, to spread it in that sense, right? I have a gift so I can give it back. And in many ways, it's giving it back to Jesus too. Like, he gives me this gift, and when I practice this thing, I'm giving it right back to him that everybody gets to benefit from. And in the same way, some of you have gifts that I don't have. Some of you have callings and talents and things I have zero skill set for. Like, every time I watch our worship team, I'm like, I wish I could even play the tambourine or the triangle, but that would not be giving back. That would be wrecking everything. Like, I don't get to do that, but I love that. I love that there's others who have those things. And that's exactly the way it's meant to be, right? That we're all coming together for this collective investment. And in making that investment, it's where we all actually grow. In fact, dropping into verse 11 of Ephesians 4, he says, now these are the gifts that Christ gave to the church. He just said, hey, one body, one Lord, one baptism, but a bunch of different gifts are spread about. These gifts are the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the pastors, and the teachers. And that's not the exhaustive list. It's just a list. You go to Romans 12, there's another list. You go to 1 Peter 4, there's another list, and there's probably other lists on top of those lists. I mean, it's just, there's all sorts of things. Because their responsibility, at least the leaders of the church, are to equip God's people to do his work and build up the church, the body of Christ. He says this will continue until we all come to such unity in our faith and knowledge of God's Son that we will be mature in the Lord, measuring up the full and complete standard of Christ. So again, we're all pitching in together, right? We're all bringing the stuff to the same table. And the goal is to be like Jesus, to not be like religion, but to be like Jesus. That's why I say Jesus didn't come to start a religion. He came to start basically a bunch of people that image him, that embody his iconic person. He says, based on this, we will no longer be immature like children. We won't be tossed and blown about by every wind of new teaching. We will not be influenced when people try to trick us with lies so clever they sound like the truth. Instead, we will speak the truth in love, growing in every way more and more like Christ, who is the head of his body, the church. He makes the whole body fit together perfectly. As each part does its own special work, each of us has a special work to do. That's so cool. As each part does its own special work, it helps the other parts grow so that the whole body is healthy and growing and full of love. What I love about this is it's just letting us know that solo growth, right? Solo growth is as fictional as Han Solo would be. Like, it's not, it doesn't work that way. I can't just be like, I'm going to sequester. I'm going to just have my own personal faith, my own spirituality apart from this collective thing that Jesus is building. No, the only way I will grow is in community. That's what Paul's telling us. It's impossible to grow to our fullest capacity outside of community. Right? We have to be refreshed by one another. We need to be refined by one another. We need to be refueled by one another. That's true. And again, I want to just go back to what the goal is. The goal is not to be more religious or more dogmatic or whatever. The goal here is, he says, it's really clear. Verse 15. We are growing in every way more and more like Christ. See, as a church, the thing I want to make sure we're always committed to is, hey, does it smell like Jesus? Does it sound like Jesus? Does it feel like Jesus? Like, when people have contact with us, they're like, oh man, I'm getting a sense of this Jesus guy through them. Because again, that's always to be the benchmark. Always, right? We want to do things like him because we want to point to him, and therefore everything has to always be about him. We never want to lose sight of that. Now, I'll tell you where this became weirdly important to me. This week, I was studying for next week. So I was looking at some Barna data. If you're not familiar with the Barna Group, they basically are a Christian organization that does a lot of polling, and it gives us a sense of, man, how is religion seen in the culture, how's Christianity seen, give stuff for the church, give stuff outside of the church, all this different data, right? And so I was actually looking at stuff on how we can be more effective in sharing Jesus with those that we want to see come to know Jesus. So I was just looking at that. But in the midst of that, there was some data that they had that was related to how the world sees Christ, how the world sees Christ's message, and then how the world sees Christians. And the title of the data was, they like Jesus and his message, but not necessarily his messengers, right? And so there was a piece of data for this. You can't read that at all. Don't worry. You're like, what's going on there? Yeah, I just need a much bigger screen is what I need. But you can get a sense of, like, there's green and then yellow and then red. And it was breaking down the data. And so they polled, like, a giant population. And then in that, there was a group of non-religious, right? And that was the one that stuck out to me. So the non-religious, the top thing they said is, we like Jesus, comparative. Like, how many had a positive statement? They're non-religious, right? They have no orientation. But still, in the realm of Jesus, it was like 46%, I think it was. Let me double check that. No, 40% of people that were completely non-religious go, I have a positive view of Jesus. Weirdly enough, after spirituality, the third thing they had a positive view of was the Bible. That shocked me. Like, I could see people going, I like Jesus, he was nice to people, but the Bible is old, archaic, weird, rude, just whatever. They could say all kinds of stuff. But they had a higher view of the Bible than Christians. They had a higher view of the Bible than the local churches. Our particular brand of Christianity is evangelical. They had a much higher view of the Bible than of evangelicals. Matter of fact, evangelicals and celebrity pastors were equal at 9% positive. I thought, wow. Now, here's the thing. I know some of us, we get a little irritated by these stats, and we go, oh, it's just because they're hard-hearted, and it's not on us. And I go, we all know. We all know that, you know what, some of that is just press. Some of that is just, yeah, people stir up strife, and they just want to be nasty toward Christianity or whatever else. But we also know that, man, some have kind of made this hard for us to effectively do. They have not represented Jesus always well within the context of society. And for me, then, when I think about this, here's how I basically break it out. I kind of look and I go, if you have a high view of Jesus, that view of Jesus should equal your view of those who follow Jesus if those who follow Jesus are looking like Jesus. Or to maybe say it differently, if you don't like Jesus at, let's say, 50%, you should also not like his followers at 50% because they look like him. It makes sense to have an equal fitting. I don't like Jesus and I don't like you who follow Jesus. But if they go, I like Jesus, but I don't like the followers of Jesus, do the followers of Jesus, do they need to look more like Jesus to try to fill the gap? Now, here's the thing I'm going to say about us as a church. I think y'all are getting this done, man. I really do. Like, Ellen and I will kind of have our own private conversations and talk about, like, just things about Redemption Church. And I'm like, man, our people, they love Jesus. They want to do the Jesus thing in our culture, in our community. They want to show that and showcase that more and more. So I really think, man, we are getting it done. But you know what? I want us to continue to just kind of spin that flywheel. I really do. I want our community here in Duval or Carnation, Monroe, wherever, I want them to look and go, man, those people at Redemption Church, they are a different kind of people. They are a different kind of people. In the world of normal, they're abnormal. Because that's what holiness is, right? Being outside of the norm, being abnormal from what is seen or felt or understood. See, that's my heart. In fact, right now I'm reading a book, which is not uncommon. I guess that's my life. But I'm reading a book on the early Christian church. And this is an area that I've always been fascinated by because I'm like, how did you go from, again, Jesus is super compelling. The 12 around him, they were kind of messy. Like, of the 12, one betrays him, right? Like, that's messy. And then it starts with just this ragtag group of people, and within 300, 350, 400 years, it transforms an entire empire. Like, how did it do that? Right? And so this book is just looking at that, and I've looked at other books about this, and there were some things that they did. They just owned, right? The first thing they owned, they actually really doubled down on the idea, again, that the Sermon on the Mount is Jesus' message to be done. It's not just theoretical, it's not just theological, it's not just stitched on a pillow or found on a bumper sticker or put it on your coffee mug. It's a thing to be done. And they did it, man. They did it. They did it so much that when they're dropping like flies, Rome's imprisoning them, killing them off. Rome couldn't kill one that wasn't happy for dying. They're just like, yeah, take me, man. I love Jesus, I love you, and I know where I'm going. That was their attitude. And people just after a while are like, what do I do with that? It's unbelievable, man. They just took that seriously. Another thing they did that became so compelling is they actually leaned into what Christ-centered community looks like. So they said, all right, as much as the Sermon on the Mount is designed to change the world, there is this set of values that I'm going to unpack in just a second, and that's for us in here, and we're going to do that no matter what it takes. We're going to be such a connected community that is generous and erring on the side of grace with one another. It'll be so profound that people from the outside are going to be clamoring to want to get in. Because they're like, if that's how relationship is done among you all, wow, we need that. Because that's not how relationship is done out here with all of us. That's a different kind of game, right? See, just by doing those two things, by to the world living out the Sermon on the Mount and in the church living out these values that we're going to unpack in Colossians 3, you know what? One of the funny things I've read in a number of books now is that the early church did not have any real active evangelism strategy. What they were was such compelling bait people wanted to join. How do we join? What's it take? I want in. I'm kicking in the door. And honestly, I go, that's what I want us to be, man. That's what I want us to be. I want us to be like where people are like, I just got to know. What makes you so different? You guys seem super, super content with life. You seem that nothing rattles you, right? This fruit of the Spirit thing, it just is an aroma of life. That's the life I desire to have. Like, that's the heart. And so from that, then the question is, if the Sermon on the Mount is what they did outside, inside is this other set of values. What is that? What was this life together that they lived that was so abnormal? Well, that's the third point. What life together looks like is standing outside of the norm in ways that we do community. That's going to be the point of this, right? Like, again, outside of the norm is what being holy is all about. That's what we talked about last week, to be abnormal in a, quote, normal world. So then why is this so important that we're so abnormal? Here's the thing that Jesus does. He comes to his disciples and he says, man, the world's going to be watching. And as they watch, they're going to be looking for something very particular. And if you can do this particular thing, it'll be the most substantial proof that I'm legit, this is legit, this whole thing is for real. So he says this in John chapter 13. He says, I'm giving you a new commandment, right? And this new commandment is really simple on paper, really tough in practice, that you love one another. He says, just as I have loved you, you should love each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my followers, my learners, my disciples. And let me tell you why I dig this little chunk. Here's where it's kind of simple. All I have to do is say, to what degree do I think Jesus loves me? Right? I can just meditate on that. How much does Jesus love me? Well, he forgives me. He forgives me 70 times seven, in fact. He sees my mess, but doesn't say, you know what, I'm not going to love you until you clean up your mess. He sees the things I'm not even aware of, but he stays in relationship with me. He's in it for me. He gives me his full, like, righteousness, it says. He's going to let me sit on a throne with him, it says in the book of Revelation. I don't even know what that looks like. That's a big throne, right? But because we're all sitting there with him, he says, right? So he does all that. So you love me so unconditionally, so beautifully, so thoroughly. So Jesus, how do you want me to love my fellow believers? As I have loved you, Matt, you love them. You love one another. Again, on paper, easy. In practice, it can be so, so tough. But can I tell you what I love about this too? Christians spend a lot of time and a lot of money on something called apologetics. Apologetics is a fancy word for giving intellectual proofs or defenses of the Christian faith. What I love about what Jesus does here is he says, let me do you a favor. The greatest apologetic in this entire world is if we love one another well. That's how the world knows. They don't need to know about cosmology and cosmogony and biological debates. Those things pale in comparison to if we love each other well, that's when the world goes, that dude's got to be for real. Because we don't do this well as a species, right? We don't love each other really, really well. We love those that love us. We love the lovely. Jesus even says, big deal. Anybody can do that. But when we love the tough to love, when we love each other in conflict, whatever, like that's the thing. The world goes, I'm going to sit up and pay attention. Right? When we have that kind of bandwidth, that shows that it's the Holy Spirit doing a work in us to produce a thing in us to then hopefully be compelling for the world around us. So in Colossians chapter 3, Paul starts to outline, hey, how do we do this together internally? What does community look like? What does each individual need to bring to the table so that we as a collective whole can show the beauty of Jesus in the hardships of life? And honestly, when I look at Colossians 3, I think it's probably among the toughest stuff to do. I really believe that. Like, I'm not saying it's easy. I think it's as tough as the Sermon on the Mount is to do, especially to love an enemy. I think Colossians 3 is tough to do sometimes in the context of Christian community. I think it is. But I think it really separates out the difference between I believe what Jesus says versus I believe in what Jesus says. And I've said this before, if I believe what Jesus says, then I actually am going to do it because I believe it, right? I go, you know what, whether I like it or don't like it, I believe that life is better with you when I do life your way. So I'm gonna do what you say. But if I just kind of believe in, then Jesus becomes a little bit of the poster child, and then I pick and choose what it is I want to do and don't want to do. And yet when I get to Colossians 3, I find that this is just what's expected. What we have to fight to see happen as we are a community of faith. And so it says, since God chose you to be holy, holy people that he loves, you must. Again, holy means outside of the norm, uncommon, right? That's our whole thing. Abnormal. Here's how we're to be abnormal. He says, you must. You must clothe yourselves with tenderhearted mercy and kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Make allowance for each other's faults and forgive anyone who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. You know what I love about this, aside from the fact that much of it I don't want to love because I'm a selfish human being that wants to have his grudge and wants to have his hang up and wants to be judgy and all those different kinds of things. I love even this whole thing here about make allowance for each other's faults. That should sit like, whoa, maybe I'm not good at that. But I love this, forgive anyone who offends you. He doesn't say forgive anyone who asks for your forgiveness. He says, if they offend you, do yourself a favor, forgive them. And he says, why? Because that's what Jesus did for you. That's what God did for you. That's what God did for me, right? Like, if it's good enough for me, it's good enough for me to do toward anybody. See, I look at this and I go, if we just had this done relentlessly and consistently and selflessly, man, we would be truly uncommon in our world, right? We would. We would be radically uncommon. And in fact, if I just take that first part of Colossians, I'll be super open with you. I actually think that all our evangelism strategy hinges on the effectiveness of doing Colossians 3 well. Because that's what I see in the early church. They did this well. They did this so selflessly. They fought for this, man. Like, we're going to make this happen. And that's why people were kicking in the door. How do we join? Because they'd say, man, the way that, even the critics, like, you read, like, Roman literature on how these awful Christians are so sacrificial toward one another and so hospitable. They're so weak. And that was the critique. The critique was they, in an honor-shame culture, they were so loving toward each other, even in their faults, it was shameful. But that changed the world, right? Changed the world. Love it. This is why I want us as a church to be like, man, I want this so bad. I want it in my bones. I want it in my soul. Take it deep into our heart, because what it takes is deep heart to do this. It says in verse 14, above all, clothe yourselves with love. Love. And when in doubt what this word means, just go to 1 Corinthians 13. Like, sincerely, I think it's the best definition of love. That's why I always say, fruit of the Spirit, definition of love. Paul's definition is great. Because he says, here's what love is not. It's not this and this and this and this and this. It's something altogether different. So when in doubt, just what did Paul say about love? He says, clothe yourselves with this love, which binds us all together in perfect harmony. And let the peace that comes from Christ rule in your hearts. As members of one body, we are called to live in peace and always to be thankful. I love this because it reminds us, here's how Christian community is anchored. Love binds us, peace rules us, thankfulness defines us. Now, I should say should, because it's hard. You have to make it like the big priority. I have to make it the big priority. It's like living in the Spirit to get the fruit of the Spirit. It has to be the paramount priority of every day. But this is what binds us. And then how is all of this established? Verse 16. He says, let the message about Christ in all its richness fill your lives. Teach and counsel each other with all the wisdom that he gives. Sing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs to God with thankful hearts. And whatever you do or say, do it as a representative of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father. What I really appreciate here, what Paul says, is he says this message must fill. He doesn't say let it fill your minds. He says let it fill your lives. Right? Let it fill your lives. And it's a message that translates not as factoids, not as platitudes, but actually he says it translates as wisdom. See, wisdom is truth in action. Wisdom is nuance applied messaging of Jesus stuff to touch the world. And so when we do this, it's not just simply that we're believing him, but or simply believing in him, but rather we're really faithfully representing him. Right? We're as individuals saying, I want to be like Jesus among a bunch of other people that want to be like Jesus. And if we're being like Jesus toward one another, this thing crushes the gates of hell, man. It does. But when it's not healthy, it's not right, it's not good, what they say is, I like Jesus, I like his message, not sure about his followers, not sure about the messengers. See, the messengers have to lean into this to show that the message, man, the message changes lives. This is why we believe as a church that life is best lived with others. It forces us to be more like Jesus when we're together. It does. That was always my joke about being in a regroup. What's great about being in a regroup is you don't get to pick your group. There may be some people in your group you're like, that person bugs me. Now you got to do Colossians 3, bro, right? Isn't that cool? This person rubbed me wrong. Right, now you get to do Colossians 3. That person is so, oh, I'm so angry at them. They're like an enemy. Great, you got to love them, do good for them, pray for them, and bless them. Boom, Jesus quote, right? Like, it's so great. It's so great because it really does require us to do what Jesus said, which is, you know what? You want to be great, you got to be the servant of all. You want to be first, you got to be last. You want to be the head of the table, you got to be the least then, right? So good. So hard, but so good. Now, here's what I want to close out by saying. In the next few months, the next year, there's going to be a lot of opportunity for us as a community of faith to do this stuff. There will. In all kinds of good ways, right? So part of coming together and using gifts. Let's go to the beginning of it, right? Using the gifts. As soon as we hit the new building, we're going to go to 2 services. Right off the bat. We have to, right? And with that, it's a huge blessing. We think we're going to see a lot of people like coming to be a part of this community and helping this community grow and everything else. But instantly, it's going to mean we need a lot of people doing some stuff because we're doubling everything. Need more kids workers. I know for Dana, I talk to Dana weekly about sometimes like, man, I just need more workers. I need more servants and need more teachers and I need more helpers. And man, if you're like, I could do that, go do that because we could use that. We're going to need more for youth ministry. We're going to need more for worship ministry. We're going to need more for our safety team, right? So there's going to be all sorts of opportunities and we're going to have classes and moms groups and you name it, all kinds of stuff's going to happen. We're going to start Praxis up again. So you're going to have an opportunity for those who want to learn or maybe be leaders. I mean, there's going to be so many ways that we can grow collectively as a community. But here's the other thing I'm almost certain of. With growth comes pain, right? With growth comes change. And all the more it's going to need us to then lean into that Colossians 3 stuff. Like there's going to come times where everybody's trying to get into that parking lot at once. And there's going to be frustration. And you thought you had a parking spot and you didn't. And now you got to park way down here. And man, back at the school, we didn't have to walk that far. Whatever the thing could be. Like super first world problems are going to emerge, right? And it's going to be an opportunity. There's going to be times where maybe something alters and you have, I loved it, that thing. And then it changed. And why did it change? And now we do it this way now. And it's going to be a chance to do Colossians 3. See, everything teaches. Everything is opportunity to showcase Jesus. Easy things are, hard things are, fun things are, difficult things are. It's all a chance. It's all an open window. And so I kind of like that. I like that it is in the contours of life that we require to do the hard stuff to make much of Jesus. Because the world's watching. The world's watching. Like, if you guys can get this figured out and you can be that community that works with those things and loves each other in the process of that and really lives out this Jesus-like thing amongst yourselves, man, I think people will want to join. I do. I talk to people that aren't of faith all the time. Life isn't easy for them, right? There's pain and hardship and question mark, and I think that's why many of them say, I'm open to spirituality. I'm open to Jesus. I'm even open to the Bible. I want to find a place that loves those things too. So I can explore there, I can check it out. I think that's the kind of community that we are, and I think that's a community that we will continue to grow into. So right now, I just want to go ahead and pray. And as I do, I want to kind of go two directions with this prayer. The first is, I don't know, there may be some people in this room, or maybe online, or they're going to watch this week, or whatever else, where they're like, you know, I'm more on the outside looking in. But I know I need something different. I see who Jesus is. I see the things that he says. I see the ways he's worked in some of your lives. And maybe for you, you go, I want to take that step, right? Step's really easy. It just starts with something that you already know in yourself, because we all know it in ourselves, right? That we're all kind of broken. The Bible calls it sin, missing the mark, but we all know that we're not what we hope to be or mean to be. We know that we've got some ugly spots in us, right? That kind of highlight the fact that we've got this thing that needs to be addressed. And then Jesus is like, perfect, because I came and I addressed it. I addressed it. I came and gave myself a ransom for this broken thing in you, right? Your inability to hit the bullseye, I hit it for you. And so from that, if we simply say, Jesus, I know I've gone my own way and done my own thing, and you were a ransom for me to deal with my problem because you're my solution so I can have life and eternal life with you. You make that your prayer with your words, he hears you, and I would love to know about it. Our leadership here would love to know that you said, I made that decision today. I'll be at the door afterwards, or you can go our app and there's a tile there and you can say, I made that decision. We'd love to know if you made that decision, because it's the start. It's the biggest decision you'll ever make. And it's the start of a whole new life and journey. A new trajectory. You were going away from God, now you're going toward God. It's fantastic. And Jesus, for your community of faith, your church, I do, man, I pray that the words today, my words are clumsy, they're incomplete, but boy, I pray today that your spirit takes that and goes, yes, that's the kind of community I want to be a part of. I want to contribute my wholesale best. I want to bring my best sense of being in life with Jesus to this community of people, to do life with them so that Jesus is seen brilliantly and boldly and beautifully in this community, and those outside of this spiritual community but in our earthly community will see something different and go, man, those people, they seem to get this, and that they will be compelled. Help us to know how to do that well, and help us to always do it in your name, not for our growth or our organization, or, you know, for us to, you know, make budget, all the things that can be so earthly about church sometimes. No, we want it to be purity of heart, purity of motive, and purity for you. And so, Jesus, we thank you and praise you in your good name.